Thou wast transfigured on the Mount, O Christ our God, revealing thy glory to thy disciples as far as they could bear it. Let thine everlasting light shine upon us sinners, through the prayers of the Theotokos, O giver of light, glory to thee.
Hi there. Welcome. My name is Father Athanasios. I'm the Dean here at the St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Cathedral in Tarpon Springs, Florida, and I'm your host for Be Transfigured Ministries. Welcome back to another live Bible study on the book of 1 Corinthians, inspired by the homilies of St. John Chrysostom. Tonight is session 38, and that means we are getting close to the end. There's only 45 sessions, so we're getting close. We're at session 38, and that means we will be discussing homily 37 tonight. So if you have not yet downloaded the homily or the study guide, I would invite you to do that at my website, liveanewlifeinchrist.org. If you're welcome, let me share with you how this works. If you're new, if you're welcome. If you're new, well, if you're new, comma, welcome. It has been a long day. There is a study guide, and it is again based on the homilies of St. John Chrysostom. Although we call it homilies, this most likely were actual Bible studies taught by St. John when he was the priest in Antioch. We believe somewhere in the year 385 AD, so the end of the 4th century. And we know that these were Bible studies instead of liturgical homilies, because it does not follow the lectionary. On the contrary, on his homilies in, for example, the book of Acts, it follows the lectionary. So the readings of the day match up to each homily. This was not the case, so we know that this was an actual Bible study that St. John taught at the end of the 4th century. And it's important for us, especially if you're new, you don't know why we're doing this, because Corinth, at the time of St. Paul, was a very cosmopolitan, very multicultural, very highly educated, very secularized, and very divided city, much like the 4th century Antioch, when St. John Chrysostom was the priest there, as is also the case in our modern American society. We are multicultural, we are highly educated, we are very secularized, and we are uber divided. Just turn on the news and you hear one party fighting against the other and this person calling this person names and all that kind of thing. So I'd like to think that this benefits all of us together, because it doesn't matter if we can memorize the scriptures, they somehow have to change the way we live. So our study guide is divided into three sections. The first is with the traditional text analysis, where we're going to go through the chapters, the verses of tonight's reading. By the way, tonight is, if you want to get your Bibles ready, 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verses 34 through 40. We're going to finish chapter 14 tonight. And then St. John Chrysostom, almost always, we've only found once or twice when this has not been the case in all of the years that I've been using him for Bible study, sometimes based on one word, sometimes based on a verse, he launches into some kind of a teaching that we call life application. And then the final section is our send-off, some kind of a challenge for us to lead us into the next week. Speaking of the next week, right, we are in the 5th week of the Great Fast. For those of you who this is your first Great Lenten journey, I trust that it is a blessing for you, although not necessarily easy. But things that are worth something are very rarely easy, right? And then we will have another Bible study next week, and then we'll take a break for Holy Week, and then we'll continue after Pascha. So we'll get a brief break from Bible study, but not from church, because we'll be in church every night during Holy Week. So, without further... Oh, you may have seen an ad. See that? You're supposed to remind me of these things. There are people in the room, by the way. So if you're ever in downtown Tarpon Springs on a Tuesday evening, we'd love for you to join us in person. We have one chair open, so we'd love for you to join us if you're ever here in person. So you may have seen an ad when you turned on the live stream this evening. We are currently raising money to eliminate our ads on our Bible studies. We've already been able to eliminate all the ads on our sermons and on our daily blog posts. And now the third section and our final section is to eliminate ads in our Bible studies. So there is a donate button, a fundraising button here on the Bible study. But you can also go to our website, liveanewlifeinchrist.org/give, and you can make a contribution to our Keep It Free, I think it's called, or something like that, ad-free campaign. And you can make a donation, or you can also leave a super chat donation in the middle of Bible study, and we may see that as it happens, and we may be able to say hello. So you all might be noticing that there is one empty chair. And that's because our chat room moderator is moderating from home tonight. So she's not here in person. If you're new, we do have a live chat, but you have to be watching on YouTube to be able to participate. So if you're watching on my website or on Facebook or X, formerly known as Twitter, at the bottom right corner of your screen, click on open the app or open YouTube. And as long as you have a YouTube account, you can participate in the live chat. It is moderated by Presbytera Vasi, my wife, my brilliant, amazing, talented, and being married to me proves that she's also incredibly patient. But if there's any questions in the chat room, she'll bump it over to me. I have my cell phone tonight, so I'll be able to add those into the mix. That is true. Yes, she's very patient. She's very patient. So without further ado, let's go ahead and open with prayer. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Shine within our hearts, loving Master, the pure light of your divine knowledge, and open the eyes of our minds that we may comprehend the message of your gospel. Instill in us also reverence for your blessed commandments, so that having conquered sinful desires, we may pursue a spiritual life, thinking and doing all those things which are pleasing to you. For you, Christ our God, are the light of our souls and bodies, and to you we give glory, together with the Father, without beginning, and your all holy, good, and life creating Spirit, always, now, and forever, and to the ages of ages. Amen. All right. So, 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verses 34 through 40. I see another rogue translation has made its way into the room this evening. Do we have any volunteers to read chapters 14, verses 34 through 40? Okay, great. Turn the microphone on. Bring it good and close and nice and clear. Make sure the red light is on the microphone. There you go.
Your women should remain silent in the churches. Your women should remain silent in the churches, for it has not been permitted for them to speak, as they are to be under authority, as the law also says. If they desire to learn about something, let them ask their own husbands at home, for it is not fitting that women should speak in the church. Do you think that it was from you that the word of God went out? Or did it come to you alone? If any man thinks himself to be a prophet or someone spiritual, let him recognize the things which I write to you. These are the commandments of the Lord. But the ignorant is truly ignorant. Therefore, brethren, have an intense desire to prophesy, and do not forbid speaking in tongues. Let all things be done decently and in order.
Just out of curiosity, was that intentional? Did you volunteer to read just because it said women don't speak? You're lucky we're not in church, right? We're in the hall. We're not in church, right? Okay. Huh?
It doesn't say that they're not allowed.
Beautifully done. Okay. So, as a reminder, if you're new, the section numbers that you see on the study guide. It looks like I forgot to put them in tonight, so you will not be able to find these in the homily, so good luck. Okay. I just looked at my copy. It does not have the section numbers in it, so oh well. All right, so let's just dig right in. The women were causing chaos by speaking without purpose. Listen to what Chrysostom says here, right? So this has been a very highly contentious point in the modern church, right? We have to acknowledge that. So let's see what Chrysostom can maybe shed some light on the situation. He next in course proceeds to the disorder which arose from the women, cutting off their unseasonable boldness of speech, and that very opportunely. For if to them that have the gifts it is not permitted to speak inconsiderately, nor when they will, and this, though they may be moved by the Spirit, much less to those women who prate idly and to no purpose. Right? So again, the connection here is the reason the women were reading. Right? They were inserting themselves. There was causing a problem within the church. This is why St. Paul was making this adjustment. And this is why Chrysostom says, look, if people can't speak in tongues, if people can't prophesy without the proper motivation and without the proper inspiration, then why should we make an exemption for the women who are causing a stir within the church? That's the context here, right? It's not misogynist and it's not anti this and not. It's an understanding of the order in the church. Remember where we left off last week, that everything is for the edification of the church. And so here the implication is, if someone is getting up just to prove they can, where's the edification in the church and all that? That's the point that St. John Chrysostom is making for us, right? And that's why, keep in mind, it's also connected. Of course, we separated by a whole week, but last week the entire topic was edification in the church. So this is what's going on here. It's not a misogynistic opportunity. And to make that point, let's look at point number two in the study guide. There is actually no Old Testament law against women speaking in church. So this was not a legalistic thing about the women speaking. Chrysostom says this, and where does the law say this? Your desire should be to your husband, and he shall rule over you. But it doesn't say anything about women not speaking. Right? So there's the hint there that this is not about a legalistic approach, but it's about the intent and it's about the order in the church. Continuing that theme, women are not the only ones with limitations. And if this be so in respect to husbands, much more in respect to teachers and fathers and the general assembly of the church, right? So if you go back into the homily, and you may need to read it once or twice because sometimes he gets a little complicated. He speaks really profound, almost like a philosopher. So sometimes you have to read it once or twice to get the full appreciation, but what you're understanding here is that he's helping us see, and Chrysostom helps us see this from St. Paul, that he's not picking on just one group. And you're going to see that even more as the evening goes on. So we have a question already. Look at that. Okay, so the question from Denise. What were the women reading? Was it out of turn then? Okay, great question, Denise. So if you go back, as we've been studying, in terms of one person has a prophecy and one person has a this and one person has a that, the women were jumping into that entire, I have something to read, I have a thought, I have a prophecy. And so it was adding to the chaos of the situation. Okay, that was a pretty basic thing, because at this point now, we're talking about order, and we're talking about the flow of things, right? And so we should be adding it into the mix. But I think it's beautiful here that we're seeing that it's not just women he's picking on, right? Don't worry, we'll get off the topic of women soon enough. It's okay. It's not going to be the entire thing we're talking about tonight. Okay. Where are we? Point number four. This is an interesting twist trying to show that it's good for men too. Husbands benefit as much as their wives because they are required to bring the truth home. Now remember, think back, I don't know, three or four sessions ago, where he's talking about these mutual benefit needs, right? And so here he says, fine, women, if you have some questions to ask, ask your husbands at home. And so what the point here is, that means the husbands have to be paying attention, right? So he's creating this mutual need. The women are going to be waiting to talk to their husbands and ask for clarification, but that means their husbands darn well better be paying attention so they can answer the questions, right? So there's this mutual benefit and mutual responsibility. Let's see what Chrysostom has to say. Here you see why he set over them their husbands as teachers for the benefit of both. For so he both rendered the women orderly and the husbands he made anxious as having to deliver their wives very exactly what they heard. Right? And I think this is an important thing because it is very easy to pluck out just a few words out of the scriptures and try and enforce something that it's not really there. In this particular one, women keep silent has been one of those that has been plucked out, right? And I'm thinking of another male-female husband and wife relationship, the way St. Paul in Ephesians talks about marriage, right? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Women, be subject to your husbands as to the Lord. Well, this is, people tend to take women be subject as, you know, they pluck it out saying women have to be subservient to their husbands, but they totally forget that husbands love their wives as Christ. But St. Paul always brings this mutual thing together. He's never picking on just one or the other. And the two are drawing each other together, and that's that need of each other, right? And so I'm reminded of that relationship when he's talking about here, that the husbands have to become the teachers so that they also now are acting in a responsible way. And again, I'm reminded, I don't know how many sessions ago, when we saw that, you know, they were getting drunk and they were not sharing and they were lording it over, there's this image maybe that things were totally out of control in the church, that there was this chaos kind of erupting, okay, both in terms of what was being said, the prophecy and the tongues and the not interpretation like we've talked about the past few weeks, and then the not sharing the food and not treating the poor very well. All this, remember, this is all part of the same message that St. Paul is talking about, how things are drawing us together in that act of love so we find that we need each other, right? I think that's a beautiful way. And again, making the point that he's not just picking on women. Here, Chrysostom helps us see he's not even just picking on the Corinthians. Point number five on the study guide. St. Paul's teaching is consistent with the other churches to help the Corinthians not feel targeted and therefore to accept his teaching. Thus, he brings in the other churches also as holding this law, both abating the disturbance by consideration of the novelty of the thing and by the general voice making his saying acceptable, right? So if it's good enough for the other churches, it's good enough for us. He's not just picking on the Corinthians, right? And that's a really important thing to grasp out of all this, is that St. Paul's teachings are consistent through all of the churches and through all the members of the churches. What he teaches the poor, he teaches the rich. What he teaches the men, he teaches the women. What he teaches the Corinthians, he teaches the Galatians, right? Now, we're seeing it like in different books and different chapters and things, but keep in mind that this is how that he is conveying it. So when he says, look, all the other churches do the same thing, that's helping them accept his teaching. And the flip side of that is when we say, well, Johnny's doing it, right? We also use that logic to defend our own behavior. So St. Paul is turning that on its head, saying, fine, it's good enough for Johnny, it's good enough for you. That works both ways, right? And not only does it exempt our bad behavior, but also reinforces our good behavior. So there's that kind of mutual thing going on there, which I think is pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool. Now, I'm saying that, not saying John Chrysostom. I'm not saying Chrysostom makes that point. Okay. So, point number six. See, it's not a very long Bible study tonight. We make up for the extra time for last week. St. Paul included women speaking as part of his teaching on tongues and prophecy, showing altogether this about order and benefit in the church. Now, before I go on here, I want to remind you, St. Paul has a habit of doing this to soothe the message. When he talks about one sin, like sexual immorality, what does he do? He lumps in all these other sins. Right? This is a tactic of his so that we're more likely to pay attention and accept what the teaching is. Right? To say, well, he's not just telling me, he's also telling that person, he's also telling this person. So this is how we know in this particular theme of the women speaking that this is about order. This is not about men versus women. Okay, not only did, as he says, the law states, or the law does not state that women have to be quiet. That wasn't an actual law of the church, right? And so now he's lumping it together in the topic of order in the church. Yes, turn the microphone on.
Why would anyone think that it was about men versus women?
Well, because we like to nitpick, we like to cherry pick. Right? And so, because we see this in part of it, I'm guessing, this is just a theory. Remember, chapters and verses did not exist prior to the printing press. Right? And so, it wasn't as easy to just capture this one sentence as it is now. I think that this cherry picking is a modern interpretation of this. Okay? I don't think there's an ancient interpretation. Otherwise, if the church really believed women had no authority to speak in church, let's flesh this out for a moment. What's very quickly in 5 seconds, you can identify how that can be proven is not the teaching of the church. What is it? Convents.
It's kind of different.
Women, no. In other words, if the law prohibited women from speaking, then the nuns wouldn't be able to speak in the church. And yet, the abbess has teaching authority, even in the church itself. Now, admittedly, a priest comes in to celebrate the liturgy, but the women are the chanters, the nuns are the chanters, the abbess is the head of the community. So very quickly you can see if in fact St. Paul believed in a legalistic prohibition of women speaking, there would not be women monastic communities. So that's right then and there. That to me is a very easy evidence that it wasn't the ancient interpretation of the church, because the women have been monastics for centuries. Go ahead. Yeah, was there something else?
So then, would it be accurate to say that what he's teaching here is commenting on the difference in roles that women and men play, and not a relegation of women to a substandard or a subordinate position, that it's just a difference in roles and not a difference in value or authority?
Well, if you go back and read the homily again, Chrysostom talks about, and this is actually a serious problem in the contemporary church, where women were kind of exerting themselves as, you know, anything he can do, I can do better kind of stuff, right? I mean, this is long-term, you know, political stuff within the country. But even Chrysostom says that there was this attempt that this was rooted in women saying, oh yeah, we're just as special as you.
So it's that fighting between, like, saying, like, well, we're the same, but he's saying, no, you have distinct roles.
Right, and what's he been talking about in terms of the roles of the church? Remember, he says they're not all equally honored, but they're all equally valuable, right? So this is when he's talking about the different gifts, speaking in tongues versus prophecy versus this. There are different roles, there are different gifts. Some things are more valued by the church, so there's these, but that doesn't make them more important and less important, just more honored and less honored. Now that theme is going to return later on in a few weeks when we start seeing how St. Paul's talking about the resurrection and honor in the resurrection. But there is this thing that different does not mean better or worse, it means different. Here, if I remember correctly, and it's been a few weeks since I read the actual homily text, Chrysostom is talking about how women are exerting themselves as, I don't need men. We're just, you know, we are the same. Well, you're not the same.
That was happening then too?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nothing has changed.
Well, because nothing has changed. But it is this constant theme, and that's why I used the convents as evidence that the church was not saying this. Because if the church was saying that there's better or worse, then it wouldn't be allowing that in the women monastic communities. That's how I'm making that. And just like I have said before, for example, when we talk about fasting as it relates to Holy Communion or whatever, right, there wouldn't be prohibited fasting days followed by liturgy days if the church said you are never allowed to receive communion if you hadn't fasted the day before, right? These are things you can see in the life of the church to help kind of subdue some of these fanatic expressions that make their way at one generation or another into the church. So yeah, women and men have been fighting for centuries. And since my wife is watching, I will simply say the woman is the neck and she turns the head wherever she wants. Right?
But also the
Oh, if you're going to say something, you got to turn your microphone on so everybody can benefit from it.
Okay.
Okay, then don't. Okay, next. All right.
Thank you.
All right, so so getting back to what St. John Chrysostom said here, right? This is how he's saying about this, the order and benefit of the church. So this too is his want, not only to work out what is before him, but also starting from what that set right, whatever seems to him in any way akin to it. And again, to return to the former, so as not to appear to wander from the subject, right? So he's trying to bring these things together. He doesn't want to separate. This is not just about prophecy, it's not just about tongues, it's about order, right? And that's going to launch, right? So this is our life application tonight, is everything is about proper order in the church. And before we get there, just as a reminder, although it didn't necessarily come up in the homily, one of the references to God in Greek, the Merugos, the one who puts everything in order, right? God, Demiurge is the English word, but
yeah.
Demiurgos, thank you. The one who puts everything in order, right? And so God if it's not orderly, it's not godly. Right? So God is not the God of chaos. God is the God of order. Chaos comes from the devil. Right? Because the devil's the one who separates and divides and causes this and causes that and causes turmoil. Right? The Diabolos, the one who divides. The Imurgos, the one who creates order. Right? And so this is why the church, so last week we talked about the sacredness of the church, and now St. Paul's like, look, there has to be order. If it's going to be like heaven, if it's going to be godly, it has to be orderly. Right? And so this is where everything kind of comes into play. I don't have slides for everyone at home tonight. So you're just going to have to look at my smiling face the entire time. So I hope you don't break your computer screens. But our life application, everything is all about proper order in the church. Now this is in section 4. I at least found that much out on the thing. So it's section 4 of the homily. Continues with what I call life application. Nothing is more destructive than disorder. Right? Listen to what Chrysostom says here. Again, giving a blow to them who chose to behave themselves unseemly without cause, and to incur the imputation of madness, and who keep not their proper rank. For nothing does so build up as good order, as peace, as love, even as their contraries tend to pull down, in not only things spiritual, but also in all others one may observe this. Right? So disorder disrupts. Next point. Passions take over when order ends. Chrysostom says this, neither let us then destroy our order, nor place the head below and the feet above. Right? So if you're remembering the homily, he's talking about the order of the human body, the physiology of the body. Right? The head has its place, the arms have its place, the feet has its place. That's the context here. Neither let us then destroy our order, nor place the head below and the feet above. Now this is done when we cast down right reason and set our lusts, passions, and pleasure over the rational part, whence violent are the billows and great the confusion and intolerable the tempest, all things being wrapped in darkness. Right? So this orderly thing is how we live godly lives. It's order, it's not disorder. Now remember, last week, Chrysostom helped us see that the way to change someone's opinion is to convince them that what they think is true is not really true, right? When we talked about that last week in Bible study, the wealthy aren't really happy, right? To show them that what they think is true, is not really true. Here he does it again. Point number 9 of the study guide. Only self-control brings pleasure. And where the waves and tempests are so great, what pleasure can there be? There is not any but tumult and anguish, and black clouds which instead of rain bring great sorrow of heart. The kind of thing which is wont to happen in the case of those who are enamored of beauty not their own. Wherefore, they who have no passionate love at all are in more pleasure than any lovers. Right? So again, he's trying to convince us that what we think is true is not true, so we can flee from something, right? So instead of chasing the passions, he wants to say, really, if you really want to find pleasure, you have self-control. Don't let your body just do whatever your body wants to do, because that's not orderly, right? See, there's the connection there. Continuing the point of self-control, point number 10 of the homily. there is greater pleasure in restraint. But to me, even he who loves but restrains his passions seems to live more pleasurably than he who continually enjoys his mistress. This particular homily gets a little risque at places. You have to accept that this is real life that St. John Chrysostom is talking about. He's talking about parts of the body and stuff like that. But again, in this theme of control, of order and self-control. Point number 11, self-control and order lead to heaven. So we're all going someplace. And these things have been said by us as one would speak discoursing with licentious youths who do not very patiently submit to hear our discourses of the kingdom and of hell. And now that we are bringing forward these topics also, it is not even possible to say how great is the pleasure of the continent. If one frame in one's own mind his crowns, his rewards, his converse with the angels, the proclaiming of him before the world, his boldness, those blessed and immortal hopes of his. If I remember correctly, here he's talking about how kids like to rush into things, if I remember the homily correctly. Am I remembering it correctly? Here we go. We're getting even deeper. St. John Chrysostom gets down to their level to raise them up. Sexual passions are the most base of all passions. If I have spoken these things more plainly than is becoming, right? So he's admitting that he's getting a little risque. He's going to actually ask for their forgiveness here. Let no man blame me, for I desire not to make a brave show of a gravity of words, but to make my hearers grave. Therefore also the prophets spare no such words, wishing to extirpate the licentiousness of the Jews, but do even more nakedly inveigh against them than we do now in the things we have spoken. For so a physician, wishing to remove an ulcer, does not consider how he may keep his hands clean, but how he may rid the patient of the ulcer. And he who would raise on high the lowly first makes himself lowly, and he who seeks to slay the conspirator stains himself with blood as well as the other, and this makes him the more brilliant. That's a really interesting take with St. John Chrysostom, right? The acknowledgement that almost to the point of vulgarity in the homily, but very vivid and very graphic. And he's like, look, we're going to get down to your level so that you understand that what I'm talking about is serious. He's not talking above their heads. And the danger here, now, not with Chrysostom, because he doesn't stay at their level, right? We've talked about this before in both St. Paul and St. John Chrysostom, and for that matter, Christ and the apostles. The idea of getting down at their level is only for the purposes of capturing them to then elevate them. Okay? What tends to happen in today's world is we come down to their level and we stay there. But the real joy is to come down to capture the attention to then draw them up. This is what Christ did in his condescension. He didn't stay like we are. He came down to be at our level to then raise us up. The apostles, St. Paul taught the exact same way. Even sometimes he says, I'm not speaking to you in human terms, no. Right? Showing that he's coming down to our level so that he can raise us up. Chrysostom is picking up, look, I'm doing this for a reason. And that's where we lack that second step in today's practice, in our contemporary, come down to our level, unfortunately, too many people just stay there, right? Instead of raising them up. Okay, here's a question. Randall says, can women call themselves pastors? I guess. I mean, a pastor is a shepherd. Obviously we have priests, but I am the pastor of the community. And so in the Protestant tradition, they're all pastors. They don't call themselves priests in the, you know, like in the Baptist context and things like that. I guess Randall's question is more along the lines of, let me say it this way, Randall. As St. Paul would say, all things are lawful, not all things are beneficial. There's nothing stopping women from being pastors in the sense of leading people to Christ. Again, in a women's monastic community, the abbess, a woman, is leading the people. She is shepherding the nuns. Okay, now we don't call her pastor. We call her eldress, the female version of elder. Right? But now Presbytera Vasi, and this is the tradition of the church, hers is an honorary title because of who she's married to. A woman is not a presbytera if she's not married to a presbyter. Mm-hmm. Right? And in the Russian tradition, they're matushkas, and they're kuryas in the Arabic tradition, but that's an honorary title because of who they're married to. But then when their husband dies, they don't lose their title. Okay, but the question here about being pastors, I have no problems with that within the context of the Protestant tradition, because they are leading people, and that's what a pastor does. A pastor leads people. Okay, but we don't use the terminology in the sense of our church. Although I call myself a pastor, I'm a presiding priest. I'm the head priest. So we use totally different language within the Orthodox Church anyway. Hope that answers your question, Randall. Okay. Final point before we move on to our send-off. It is madness, I tell you, madness to focus on passions. For what do you consider the moment of pleasure? That before the criminal action? Nay, it is not so, for it is a time of madness and delirium and frenzy. To grind the teeth and be beside oneself is not any pleasure. And if it were pleasure, it would not produce the same effects on you which they who are in pain endure. All right? So he's actually reminding them that the same symptoms of someone who's sick and in pain is the exact same experience they have when they're totally engrossed in their pleasure. I mean, if that is not trying to get people to step away from that, I think it's a really profound link there to show that, look, our passions are not as they're supposed to be because they're fallen, right? And all of the things we experience in our passions are the fallen version of what God has given to us, right? Even our love tends to be selfish. Everything tends to be about me and about this and about that. And so what Krista wants to see here is that chasing that stuff, again, trying to show that it's not what we think it is. It's not as fun, right? To take it away from sexual pleasure for a moment, right? How many times have we seen, even if it's in the movies, when someone is vomiting in, you know, after being drunk, you really tell me that person is enjoying that moment? Right? And they're like, oh, I'll never do this again. You know, this is what Christendom wants us to see. Those moments, we have to call them and say, look, this is the reality. That's not pleasure, right? To chase those things, who'd want to chase standing over a toilet for 3 hours and vomiting, right? Is it worth the extra bottle of vodka? I don't think so, right? Okay. Before we move on, we have an extra time. Any questions? We had a nice conversation last week. We don't have to. You can get off early tonight. That's okay. All right. So I don't see anything else from Presbytera on the chat room. So here's our send-off. Seek self-control over pleasure. Since then, this man's life is more than pleasure. While the life spent in love of pleasure is in dejection and disquiets, let us free from licentiousness. Let us keep hold of continence, that we may also obtain the good things to come. Let's just learn a lesson from when we screw up and say, was that really worth it? And then draw on that to encourage us to avoid it again, right? And that's the goal, because we are here to be with God, to live orderly lives, not chaos. And chasing all this stuff only brings us into chaos. All right, next week, session 39, homily 38. You have it here if you want to read it in advance. I encourage you to read the homily in advance. Until next week, God bless you, and don't forget to live a new life in Christ.
Be Transfigured is a production of Be Transfigured Ministries in cooperation with the St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Cathedral in Tarpon Springs, Florida. We depend upon your generosity to maintain our ministry. You can make a safe online donation when you visit our website, liveanewlifeinchrist.org. Be Transfigured is a production of Be Transfigured Ministries in cooperation with the St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Cathedral in Tarpon Springs, Florida. We depend upon your generosity to maintain our ministry. You can make a safe online donation when you visit our website, live